Today's guest, Dr. Bill Senyard, has been a pastor for over 30 years, an author of numerous books on biblical themes, and a frequent speaker on all sorts of topics. But in recent years, he's taken a new path, writing award-winning Christian fantasy novels for young readers. What's that all about? Well, find out next on the Church Solutions Podcast.
It's the Church Solutions Podcast, brought to you by StreamingChurch.tv. The Church Solutions Podcast is all about helping you and your church with technology and other resources for your life and ministry. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Lacy and Phil Thompson.
It's the Church Solutions Podcast. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with us today. And I'm Phil Thompson.
And I'm Steve Lacy.
Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing just wonderful.
Yeah, you're back from vacation. All rested and ready to go.
Rested and ready to go. And yeah, my primary challenge from a coding standpoint has been overcome. So that is always good. So
yes.
The roadblock has been cleared and I can now make progress again.
Yes, Steve. For those who may or may not know, Steve is our CEO of StreamingChurch.tv, and he does a lot of the behind-the-scenes things, but he does come on occasionally, and he's on our podcast as one of our co-hosts with me. I'm going to vacation next week, so you won't have to tolerate me. All right, so... all right. Well, let's get into things here. This is episode number 479. Although I do want to say this before we start, that we have a webinar coming up. Surprise, surprise. We actually had one yesterday, which I thought was really good. And you just go, if you want to go find out what it was all about, you can look at the recorded version of the webinar by going to streamingchurch.tv/webinar. You also see some of our other webinars there as well. The one we did yesterday, I thought was really good. If you're a veteran of streaming video or new, it was all about really kind of getting things together, organized, especially we're doing this in the summer right now, depending on when you're listening to this. This is in June here, but a lot of times it's really good to kind of get things together in the summer, because then as the fall comes on, you got more stuff going on at the church. So we have some really good stuff, I thought, that we did on the webinar yesterday. Don't you, Steve?
I agree. It's very useful.
Yeah, that was very useful.
It'll help you get your act together. Check it out.
Exactly.
Some people may already have their act together, but if you know, there's some good stuff there to avoid the chaos and put some margin in your life for streaming.
Yeah, good reminder. Good reminder to reduce some of the stress. And then coming up, which will be July 22nd. I think you guys changed the date on me. July 22nd, we have another webinar. And it's called Stream Smarter. Connect deeper. Get a customized digital ministry prescription for your ministry. So we're going to introduce the Digital Ministry RX tool that you could use if you're a StreamingChurch.tv customer. And even if you're not, you probably want to hear this, because we're going to talk about how you can use some analytics here to boost your engagement, to help you grow strategically. There's a lot of things you can learn from this, and you can sign up at webinar.streamingchurch.tv. See how we did that? You got streamingchurch.tv/webinar for the past webinars. And then for the future webinar, you have webinar.streamingchurch.tv. Whose brainchild was that?
I don't know. I was just thinking we should probably change the slash webinar to slash webinars, plural.
I have thought
even
about that.
Even more clear.
I have thought about that. All right. So our guest is probably bored stiff here, and maybe some other people are too. Let me just go ahead and read his bio here. And I'm kind of excited about this. This is a very different topic for us, and I want to hear about it. So today's guest has been a pastor for over 30 years. He's an author of numerous books on biblical themes and a frequent speaker on topics like attachment theory, I hope I get this right, parenting, forgiveness, and engaging younger generations, and specifically the Gen Y and the Gen Z generation. But in recent years, he's taken a new path, writing award-winning Christian fantasy, say it again, fantasy novels for young readers. Please welcome Dr. Bill Senyard to the Church Solutions podcast. Dr. Bill, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I thought you were going to segue to me when you said that here's some people that need to get their act together, but I'm glad you didn't. It probably would have been more than truthful.
Well, I don't know about that. But so the way we do this, Doctor, is we Steve and I take turns asking questions. So I'm going to fire one off here.
Yeah.
So why are you writing Christian fantasy novels for young readers?
Yeah. After a career of being a pastor and communicating the gospel and evangelizing adults and so why this? And here's my answer is, I think we desperately need to focus on this younger generation, particularly the 10 to 16 year olds. And I would say, myself included, let me be critical. I think we've done a very, very poor job. And neuroscience is helping us better understand how churches can better evangelize and disciple that important age group. We need to get our act together.
Yeah, that's 10 to 16 year olds are digital natives. They have not been around when there was no digital. I just heard another speaker talking about how life is so much tougher for this generation. And she gave an example that I thought was really good. She goes, in the past, you know, I'm 12 years old or whatever, and my friends have a sleepover. I don't find out about it until like maybe Monday morning that I wasn't invited, you know, with my group of friends. Because, but the kids today, they're seeing on social media, oh, everybody's getting together. Why wasn't I invited? Oh, they're doing this fun thing. Oh, they're doing this. And they said there's, you know, 100 jabs to your psyche when you're at that age. I remember that age. See, that was
that's exactly the
most brutal time in life. Because the kids are just vying for position and they just have nothing held back. You know, they would really just walk all over you. And I was on the guy's side. I imagine the girl's side is even worse. So, yeah, our generation today has significant challenges that we didn't before.
Yeah, it's gotten worse. We've always had those challenges. I remember those that age group not so fondly. But you're right. Social media, there's some other things that are pushing things up. The college admissions armed race, you know, it was a big push to get kids into colleges, even at the age of 10 and 11 and 12. There's travel sports that are bumping up. Everybody's busy. Family breakdown, those type of things. But you're right. Social media has, in one way, attracted that age group because it gives them kind of a false sense of plugged in connectedness. But once they get connected, it just raises their anxiety level and actually causes destruction in that particular time when their brain neurons are actually being pruned. And so what we're finding is, here's Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Anxious Generation. And this is what he said. Social media has effectively rewired the childhood of our teens. And he's talking about that 10 to 16-year-old age group, leaving high levels of deeply rooted anxiety, insecurities, and hopelessness in its ugly wake, not to mention a generation hooked on social media like crack addicts. It's extremely dangerous. Parents should be aware of that. There's two things that our kids in that age group, and I'm oversimplifying it, but for the sake of churches and pastors who are hearing this, there's two questions their brains are subconsciously acting. One is, am I enough? Am I lovable? Am I worth, does somebody like me? And the second one is there anybody out there who has my back? And social media is pummeling the first with these connections, right? The likes and so forth. But it's been well written about, but it has nothing to say about the second. Now, the gospel does. See, this is the beauty of it, is the gospel. Jesus Christ does. Is there somebody out there that can actually love our 10 to 16-year-olds as they are, and they can actually feel it through the Holy Spirit? Yes. Is there somebody out there in the ethosphere that could actually have their backs even when they screw up? The answer from the gospel is yes. my suggestion to pastors is we just keep pummeling that, particularly in this group, 10 to 16. We cut back on all of the facts and figures and the apologetic arguments. Let's do those. But layer on top of that, this incredible good news that there is a God out there who innately loves the unlovable, the unloved, the unlovely, the unworthy, and the unlikely. Yeah. And boy, that age group needs to hear that, and they're not getting it from social media.
Yeah, and the stats back this up, right? I mean, the CDC said 42% experience sadness and hopelessness, 46% negative body image from social media.
That's right.
I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Suicide ideation.
It's crazy.
And then toss in identity issues and identity struggles and identity ideation that's going around now that's very confusing. And kids are getting caught up on that. If they are confused, they're open to a lot of different kind of stuff.
So let me jump into this. You've written some award-winning material here, Christian fantasy novels. Okay, so speaking of identity things, what is Christian fantasy? I know what fantasy is.
Yeah.
You know, I always fantasize that my Jeep will actually go up a large hill past Michael Gray and all that.
Yeah.
But Michael's one of our coworkers that has a Jeep. But what is Christian fantasy?
I get asked that a lot by pastors and parents. Like, it seems like those don't go in together in the same sentence, right? Christianity is about truth. Well, in fact, it is, but it's also about story. And the whole Bible is loaded with stories. 60% of Jesus's teachings were stories. And matter of fact, you could say theologically, he is the story. He's the word, right? So there's something that he knew about telling good stories. And what we're finding now, even secular neuroscience is showing that kids, particularly ages 10 to 16, as their brains are, they're attracted to stories. And the stories, fantasy stories, have certain things. They create this world that's kind of believable and unbelievable at the same time. They have good, and Christian fantasy has good and bad characters. They're perfectly clear. You know who the good ones are and the bad ones are. They have what Tolkien called recovery. So this would be, you know, you're headed into a catastrophe, and Tolkien says all of a sudden something happens and there's a eucatastrophe, which he calls in his writings evangelium. Good news that changes things. That in Christian fantasy, there is a character, a protagonist, who actually has to sacrifice and often has to die for the sake of those people who are in trouble. Think Aslan in Chronicles of Narnia. And in the end, in Christian fantasy, not secular fantasy, but Christian fantasy, Tolkien called it consolation. You know, in the end, the evil is treated with justice, and the good is restored, and they all live happily ever after. Also, one other thing that's very important, and particularly Tolkien saw this, and people have observed this in his later edits of Lord of the Rings, is that even from the first chapter, the first pages, the reader somehow gets it that there is something, a good force moving the story, and you just know that it's going to end well. And it gives kids in particular who are prone to anxiety, who are prone to feeling alone, feeling isolated, feeling afraid that the world's going to end and such, that, oh, no, when I get into this book, it's going to end well. And I would suggest that's the Bible, too.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Christian fantasy is really, you know, the classics of Christian fantasy, as you mentioned, is C.S. Lewis's The Tales of Narnia. That's Christian fantasy, right? As well as or is there a difference between the Christian fantasy that you're writing and Lord of the Rings and these sort of things?
Yeah, you know what? When I grow up, I want to be Tolkien and Lewis, and I'm using their philosophies because they got onto something that has been lost. I mean, Tolkien's credited with this whole genre called fantasy, which is huge right now, right? But you know, people who dig into it, and I would say this, if you start, let me back up, the Lord of the Rings became a phenomenon in the United States during 68, 69, 70, during that ridiculously hard time, Vietnam War, assassinations. Do you remember the Democratic National Convention where they put dogs on people? I mean, it was a harsh, 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 troubled time. And guess what? The Lord of the Rings exploded among the teenagers. post-World War II, Chronicles of Narnia exploded among the teenagers of post-World War II Britain. There was something about it that took their anxiety away, made them think that this could end well, that there was some hope. And the hope was in this kind of character Aslan, or this character named Gandalf. But since that time, since the 70s, let's say, fantasy has been highly, highly, highly secularized. There's essences of Tolkien, but what's missing is this notion of a grand good character, a providential flow of goodness, the stuff that looks like Jesus. It's gone. It's just taken away from that. And that's between like the 70s and the 90s. And from the 90s, there's even almost an anti-Tolkien-esque. Matter of fact, if you hear articles and interviews, they even say that. So G.R.R. Martin, the Romanticists, they're almost pushing against goodness. They're flawed characters that doesn't turn out well. Evil wins at the end. And it just confuses kids. So think of Dune, for instance, or think of G.R.R. Martin or Hunger Games, that type of thing. Yeah. It's confusing. Or most Marvel movies. Now, for adults, no problem. Well, could be. But anyway, my problem, and Tolkien's would have been during this 10 to 16-year-old time frame when kids are looking for, their brains are actually being shaped, and they're either going to be shaped by a kingdom-oriented structure where there is something good and it's going to end up well and is structured in their inner working models, or that the world's confusing. And sometimes evil wins, and good, what's good, what's evil, it's not sure. We're complicated characters. Well, between 10 and 16, we need to say something different to kids, because when they get to be 18, 19, and 20, they need that structure. It's actually, I call it a pre-evangel. So they read Chronicles of Narnia, and then the youth pastor comes and says, so what do you think of Aslan? And oh, by the way, let me tell you, the Aslan character, he reflects Jesus in the Bible. Let's read about Jesus and his death for sin. And the kids go, oh, that makes sense in my worldview now. If everything's confused, they're going to ask questions like, yeah, but what about the people? What about other religions? What about, I mean, is Jesus really good? You see the questions that are raised if we don't really structure this well. And the time to do it is 10 to 16. So youth pastors, tell these stories. They're powerful. And neuroscience is even telling us that. If you read a good story, your anxiety level drops 68%.
Hey, let me jump in here. Steve wants to ask you a question, but I'll cut him off. But that's good. I like what you said there, Bill. But what's your opinion on Star Wars?
Me personally? I love it. The storytelling is brilliant. There is a good and bad element to this. So I put that in the category of Christian-esque. I would put Harry Potter in that same category. Stories that they do have a good and an evil. And there's some lobbing around, but there's a good and an evil. I have, by the way, preached the gospel from a Star Wars theme. I have preached the gospel from a Harry Potter theme. I've had complaints and emails, but I have done it.
Yeah. So how, as you get through, like you mentioned, the youth pastor saying, tell me about Aslan. And I think a lot of 10 to 16-year-olds will not consider that, oh, well, that was my Jesus character. How to subtle do you need to be with this Christian fantasy to evoke the, to get the right medicine there?
I don't think you have to be very subtle at all. I mean, what neuroscience is telling us, and this is the beauty of it, is by the time a kid is 10 years old, 10, 11, their brain, their gray matter has been filled. They're like chia pets within their skull. It's just neurons and neural connections. And between 10 and 16, the way we're developed, the way we're designed by God, is to start pruning these things. And the brain prunes them based upon a use thing. You use it or lose it. And so if at age 10, 11, 12, we're telling them these stories, just telling them the stories, the neural networks that don't fit that story are being taken away. So by the time they're 14, 15, and 16, they're ready to hear this story that is in line with their brain's worldview. And see, I'm not even talking about the power of the Holy Spirit and the power of the gospel. I'm just speaking humanly here. Let's make it easier for these poor kids who are being pummeled by social media, who are being pummeled by news and fears and environmental anxieties and all of those things. We're actually fighting a battle for our kids' kingdom foundation and kingdom worldview. If we don't do it, humanly speaking, it's going to be harder for them to go, oh, Aslan. Oh, yeah. Gandalf. Oh, that makes sense. Dumbledore. Oh, he's that kind who keeps protecting Harry and save, it even dies for Harry. You mean like Jesus? You see what I'm saying? It's actually a no-brainer.
Yeah. So my next question was right along those lines is, you know, their typical 10 to 16-year-olds, they're going to be striving for that dopamine hit on social media or whatever. How do you get the kids to become interested in a story or a book? Is the format a book or is it some other means? How do you make that transition?
Yeah, scientists are basically saying it's a book. Book actually works. And, you know, I think that part of the reason God actually used written word, partly because we're created that way. Here's a secular neuroscientist, Gregory Burns, and this is what he says. Stories, and he's talking about books, shape our lives and in some cases help define a person. The neural changes we found associated with physical sensation and movement systems suggest that reading a novel can transport you into the body of the protagonist. We also know good stories can put you into someone else's shoes figuratively. Now we're seeing that something may also be happening biologically. If parents would read to their kids when they're younger, and if the kids would start reading when they're 7, 8, 9, and if we give kids good books that are interesting, that are fun, where the characters are relatable and going through their issues of identity issues and loneliness and put on a quest where they fail, those kind of things, kids will read books. Right now, we haven't emphasized that, and reading is way, way, way down. But there's something about books that actually creates that dopamine hit.
So besides your own books that you've written, is there authors, is there genres, are there things out there that you would recommend for myself? I'm asking. I just went to my granddaughter's oldest grandchild's sixth birthday. So she's just getting into this window. So I'd love to, you know, for the parents of those out there, what do you recommend?
For the younger kids, Wing Feather series, the Green Ember series are excellent. Rabbits and Bunnies, and it's really, real, really well written. Of course, Chronicles of Narnia is a classic. Definitely, that was just great to read. It's simple. It flows. It's got brilliant theology in it. And The Hobbit for younger kids. The Lord of the Rings series is a little bit old. And there's others, but those are ones that I would suggest just start off with. Harry Potter. You know, I know a lot of Christian families don't like the magic and things like that, and I understand that. But there's those characters in Harry Potter that can reflect some of the gospel, even though it wasn't written specifically for a Christian audience.
What about the you left off Alice in Wonderland?
Alice in Wonderland. Interesting. I haven't thought about that.
All right.
I'd have to consider that more.
Yeah, that was a joke.
I love it, by the way.
Yeah, well, I do too. But let's not go there. So we're starting to run out of time here a little bit. So I do want to promote what you're doing. But before I promote what you're doing, what are some practical steps as a pastor? And I'm a former pastor and all that. What are some practical steps that churches and maybe youth groups can actually take?
Yeah. So let me start off big picture. And this is for all ages. I mean, the prime message, and it really should be said every Sunday or every Saturday night, is there is a God. There is a God who created the universe. I'm not going to go into that. There is a God who exists in Trinity. I'm not going to go into that. But here's what I will go into. He innately loves the unlovable, the unloved and the unlovely. Innately, that's his thing. He pursues them. He pursues the unworthy and the unlikely. Can I introduce you to that deity, that God? We are an increasingly lonely generation with deep, deep, deep insecurities. And I just I challenge pastors to focus on, you know, there is a God here, and you can access power, Paul says in Ephesians 3, to through the Holy Spirit in you to actually begin to feel the grasp, the height and width and length and depth of Jesus' love for you right now. You may not be getting that from anybody else, but Christian, you can actually feel God's hug now, just a little bit more to sit in heaven. And I think that would actually change the conversation in many congregations. I think we'd grow. For 10 to 16-year-olds, it's critical that that message gets out there and gets out there to single moms who have teenagers, to teenagers. See if we can begin to wean them, Steve, like you said, from that dopamine hit that social media gives. Being embraced by experiencing Jesus's embrace is a bigger dopamine hit. We can begin to displace people's dependence upon social media. And have them start talking about that. And one of the things I'm doing is I'm developing workbooks, two little free PDFs. They'll be available in August. But one is, why is it so important that teenagers get into Christian fantasy? And the second one is discussion guides for my four fantasy books right now for teens, for mentors of teens. You know, here's how you can kind of, in the first six chapters, where you can start the conversation and ask the question, did you relate to that character? Did you not? How do you think that person felt when so and such happened? So you can start developing that talk. Again, social media tries to do that, portrays itself as doing that. You know, we're trustworthy, and they're just not. It's an algorithm.
Dr. Bill Senyard is our guest today. Dr. Bill, so tell me the books you've got and how people can get a hold of you.
Amazon and Kindle, they're all on that. My first book, which is The Tale of the Unlikely Prince, is also on Audible. And you know, I will tell this to youth pastors, it actually deals with this quest kind of a rubric. But in this case, the quester fails. And the real quest is, how do I get back to the king as a failure? And what does the king do, God, when I come back and I'm actually a failure? Will he reject me? Will he punish me? Will he criticize, wag his finger, or will he embrace me? And it's just a great, great, great uplifting book for those people who are afraid of failure. Oh, and by the way, that's 10 to 16-year-olds. The second book is The Storyteller's Tale, the storyteller of the first book. Somebody's digging up her issues, her secrets, the things that she's tried to hide in her past, identity issues and depression and cutting and stuff. So she has to figure out who that is and why and what to do about it. So it's topics of healing and forgiveness and acceptance as you are. There's identity issues in there. The third one, The Garden Tale, is about social media addiction. And the antagonist has convinced the entire country there is no king, and he's used a form of social media to gaslight the entire country. So how do you fix that? And the last one is The Tale of the Orphan Magician. It's about searching for Father. This is the gospel presentation. I believe that when the fall happened, we have now all of us been born searching for Father, not paterfamilias, not a physical father, but this place, this embrace, this relationship where I'm totally accepted as I am. I can't mess it up. And that father figure always says, you're my beloved child with whom I am well pleased. And he always has my back. And we're always searching for that. So this is a book of what happens if we don't find it. And it's a world war. It's kind of like a Jack Ryan series. There's special forces, there's trolls, there's dragons. And it's a wild book. And it's getting great reviews on Amazon.
Wow.
People can also find my books on drbillsenyard.com.
Okay, and we'll spell that, right? So Dr. Bill Senyard is drbillsenyard.com, right? So
thank you, Steve. Yep, that's exactly right.
That's good. Is that the best place to go, or these are all available on Amazon as well, I assume?
Oh, yeah. Everything's on Amazon and Kindle, and they will all eventually be on Audible. I'm having them done right now.
Yeah. My son is dyslexic and really had a bad – I mean, he's going to be 27 this
year. Sure.
And he hates to read because of his struggles.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
So, it was a real challenge with him growing up. Mm-hmm. So Audible, I guess the audiobooks, that audio Audible books would be very helpful for people that may be struggling with that.
Oh, absolutely. I would definitely encourage that. And the books are riddled with Scottish accents and South African accents and Australian accents. So it's a lot of fun. So he would enjoy that.
Wow.
Or, I'm a big Audible fan. I've got probably a couple of hundred books on Audible now. So yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. It's it used to fill my commute time and my workout time and my food.
It's the biggest growing aspect of books and writings there is today.
Awesome. Well, this has been wonderful. I really enjoyed this this time with Dr. Bill Senyard, and we'd love to have you on again sometime soon. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us today, Bill.
It's been fun, just like you said it would be, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always fun. We always have a lot of fun doing this. This is, I mean, we're a tech company, but we love to do these things because it kind of gets us. Sometimes we talk about tech, but other times we're talking about something like this, which I think is really fun and interesting. All right.
Hey, Phil, can I say this one thing? If a youth pastor wants to talk to me, I'm more than happy to blab on about all of this stuff. And they can get in touch with me at bill@gospel-app.com. bill@gospel-app.com.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Thank you so much for doing that. All right. Okay. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, folks, for spending some time with us. We sure appreciate you, you know, spending a little bit of time listening to this or watching this podcast. And if you can like us, give us a rating, maybe subscribe to the Church Solutions podcast. That would be helpful to us. And you'd never miss a wonderful, fun-filled episode, right? All right. So we're done here. Thanks again. Please take care of yourself and each other. And we will catch you again on another episode of the Church Solutions podcast. Podcast.